From Calvary Church of Santa Ana, this is the Calvary Life Podcast, the show where we share stories, tell jokes, and have discussions about faith, life, and God with people from Calvary Church. Here are your hosts, Eric and Matt.
All right, welcome to the Calvary Life Podcast. Eric Wakeling here with all of you, and I have a couple new voices. Why don't you guys go ahead and introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, my name's Matt Doan. I'm the Reach Pastor here at Calvary Church. Been here for 17 years, but this is my first podcast, Eric, ever.
Ever? No other podcast? You don't have a long, illustrious podcasting career?
I've never been asked, to be honest.
All right. Well, we're happy to have you. But we also have our special guest, Bill. Why don't you introduce yourself, Bill?
Yeah, Bill Campbell with Greater Europe Mission, serving in Southeast Paris.
Yes. So we are excited to talk to you about just some of your life in general, some of what GEM does and all of that. But I just heard recently, very recently, that you, because you grew up in Philly, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
But you then had a career in broadcasting of some sort with, mm-hmm. with what? Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, in high school, I was big, you know, I was big into sports writing and all that stuff, and then went to Temple University as a journalism major.
Go Owls.
But I wound up flunking out of Temple.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah. I wasn't saved at the time and all that. Got saved at 22, Bible college. And then was in ministry, inner city Philly. Eventually, I was part-time in ministry and part-time working. And I was working at a radio station, a Christian radio station there. And I was actually selling advertising. I was a radio advertising sales rep, probably the worst sales rep in radio history.
What was the tagline of your radio station?
It's WFIL... I don't know, Philadelphia's Christian Radio or something.
So, and WFIL, Christian Radio.
Something like that.
Sorry.
It was almost exactly like that. And so I started little by little just doing some, getting some interviews for the guy who was doing a little sports show there. And then that kind of grew. And then I left WFIL, but then I was still involved with ministry. And we were raising support to be inner city missionaries. Hmm. And so, but I was also continuing to... get interviews for this guy and his radio show for, like, you know, from the Eagles and the Sixers and stuff like that. And
wow.
And then I started doing writing as well for Sports Spectrum magazine.
Oh, yeah. I totally read that thing when I was a kid.
Jason Romano. Yeah.
Yeah. And so started doing stuff for them and then everything, you know, a lot of different pieces. And then eventually I had my own kind of independent media organization, you could call it, but
what a mogul.
But yeah, it was incredible. It was just me. And but yeah, so covered the Eagles and Sixers and stuff on a part-time basis, you know.
Right.
But it was exciting.
Yeah. Did you get to sort of interview anybody that was interesting or?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I became friends with, like, Brian Dawkins, and
whoa.
He was one of my first big articles for Sports Spectrum. And got to know, like, pretty much all the Christian players on the mm-hmm. team. And I was the Christian reporter guy at the time. And James Thrash, who was a receiver.
Yeah.
And Corey Simon, a defensive tackle. And Paul Grassmanis. And, you know, we're all still friends to this day. And we were in a section of North Philadelphia called the Badlands. And so I used to ask them to come and share their testimony, like, at our church on a Tuesday night. We just called Eagles Night. And that's their day off. The NFL is Tuesdays. And yeah, they would come and the church would be packed out and they would share their testimonies. It was awesome.
Dang, that's cool. So it was last February, you were in Paris still, right?
Yes.
And was that a pretty exciting moment
Eric's
for you?
Eric's referring to the Super Bowl victory.
Yes.
Over our own New England Patriots, who one of their players comes here to Calvary Church,
wow.
Matthew Slater. So just be careful with your answer here.
But. Wow. Jackie Slater and Matthew Slater.
Yeah,
great,
that's right.
Great, great, great people. Yeah, so... the last February 27, 2018, yeah, we were still in Paris, and it was tough. The Super Bowl was on live, so it started at 12:30 a.m. and it ended about 4:30 a.m. So me and my son and my wife, we stayed up all night and watched it on French TV, which was awesome. And it was amazing. I'm a lifelong diehard Eagles fan, and my family is as well. And so it was an experience of a lifetime just to see them win it. But it was a bit of a conflict because we weren't in Philly. And so we've been waiting for this our whole lives. You know, I was 47 years old at the time. Been rooting for the team since I was probably 7 or 8. and just die hard, like die hard, like, like seriously.
Is there a Philly fan that's not die hard?
That's how it is. It's like you're either all in or you're
out. That's right.
And so it was a bit of a mixed feelings for us, but it was incredible. But of course, once we came back on furlough in the summer of 2018, Paris went and won the World Cup. France won the World Cup. So it was like we were moving around too much.
That's funny. It's the life of a missionary, probably.
Speaking of that, too, how do you explain American sports when you're in Paris?
Wow. Well, you know, it's hard for them. But American football is tough for them. And baseball, I think, is way too slow for them. Even though soccer, for me, is way too slow.
Oh, I'm a big soccer fan.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate it more now having lived there, you know, but it's just... still a little slow, but
have you been to PSG games?
I went to one early on our first year there when we were in language school, and they weren't super good at that time. It was right before they got Ibrahimovic.
Yeah,
it was right before that, so it was like a 0-0 game. It was freezing. I was like, I'm good. You know,
we just lost all listeners.
I was just gonna say we probably lost most people, and that's not Bill's fault. That's our fault.
I've learned in my life to try to not talk about soccer football too much, but right. You know,
it's tough
anyway, right. But yeah, that's awesome. So, all right. So let's get in a little bit more of your, how'd you get into missions? How'd you end up in Paris?
Well, it was amazing. I got saved at 22 reading the Bible. I wasn't going to church or anything like that. And, I was out there in the world and was just empty and miserable and crying out to God to save me. And I was looking into Islam and Buddhism and just looking for peace. And, you know, I'd had some Sunday school as a kid and stuff, and even probably asked Jesus in my heart a couple times and stuff. And so, you know, I always kind of believed in Jesus, you know what I mean? But I was just at a point in my life when I was 22 when I was really messed up. And I would only read the Old Testament at the time. I had a King James Ryrie Study Bible.
Was there was there a reason that you only would read the Old Testament? Or were you thinking about?
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Because I had doubts about Jesus because I thought, well, I went to Sunday school as a kid and whatever. I wanted to, like, find God on my own. And so my only kind of framework was I knew that God had showed up with Charlton Heston at the Red Sea, like from the movie. And so I just started in the Old Testament.
Wow.
And so I would just pop it open. But then one night I read Isaiah 53, but he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. Chastisement for our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we are healed. And it was just like, boom, like Jesus just came into my room and into my heart and just totally wrecked me. And then a year later I was at Bible college. And then,
wait, hold on. Sorry. did you just happen upon Isaiah 53?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. Yeah. I obviously know that's Holy Spirit guiding you there, but like, that's incredible that you came upon that passage without somebody saying like, you should read this passage if you're amazing. Reading OT.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, no one ever like told me about this. Like, this is so obvious.
And then what were the steps from that moment to going 12 months later into Bible college?
Well, I had gotten kicked out of Temple, well, flunked out a couple of years previous, and so I was still always trying to work my way and like get back into school, and I did community college for a year. I got saved right around September 8th, 1992, and so I was right in the community college that year, and then I started going to church, a little Bible church in the neighborhood, and that's when I found out about there was such a thing as a Bible college. I didn't know those things even existed.
Right.
And I was like, no, I don't want to get like a Sunday school certificate. Like, I want to get a real degree.
Right.
And they're like, no, it's a real school. Like, it's a real like bachelor's degree. I was like, really? In Bible? And I thought that was just like way too good to be true. Like, I could study the Bible and get a degree at the same time.
Exactly.
So.
A lot of my friends don't agree that I have a real degree, but it's all right. We do. We really do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so during my journey there over 4 years, that's where God like called me to the ministry. I had my call there, which is another story. Mm-hmm. And then reading a lot of Keith Green, you know, back, you know, why you should be a missionary.
Nice, that'll get you radical.
Yeah. So I was just like, my whole thing was always like, God, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Like, I was so happy to be saved. It was just like, Jesus, whatever you, I just want to be with you.
Yep.
I'll be a waiter. I'll be a doorman. I'll be whatever you want. You know, if you want me to be a missionary, I'll be a missionary, whatever you want. And little by little, God just led me. And then I did a summer missions trip in summer of 95 and wound up in North Paris doing evangelism.
Okay.
And I was wrecked by the spiritual need of the French people.
Hmm. Was that with Greater Europe Mission, that short-term trip?
Yes.
Okay.
This was before the internet and stuff.
I know.
You had to like actually fill out your application and like put it in an envelope and like wait, you know, 4 weeks. And you know.
I was just talking about that with grades with somebody like, you know, I remember having a, just, you didn't even know what grade you'd get in a class until they got sent it in the mail. And these kids are getting alerts these days with when a grade goes in the grade book. Isn't that crazy? It's just so different. So yeah,
so different.
You actually wrote your application to go on this trip. You went on this trip.
Yeah, you had to write out your testimony and stuff. I did. Yeah, I went on the trip.
It's laborious.
Yeah. And just with no wrecked. French background.
Oh, no French. No French at all. And yeah, I think I even used a typewriter to type up my testimony now that I think about
that. Oh, nice.
Ting, 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 ting.
So then, how'd you end up actually in just, you know, full on life in Paris, you know?
So I wound up going back to Paris the summer of 96. So the next year, again, with Jem, with the same missionaries doing the work again. I was a little bit more leadership then. Finished Bible college. Oh, so I always had this heart and this burden for Paris. God just gave it to me. And he called me to be a missionary in Paris in the summer of 96. And so I went back and had to finish up my senior year. And so in my mind, my heart, I was going to be a missionary to Paris with Jem. And in 1998, I went to candidate school. And it just wasn't God's time. You know, the Lord shut some doors and it was fine. And I went back to Philly. And then when I'm getting married, you know, dating a young lady and getting married, we got married in 2000. We started having kids. I always had a burden for Paris. She always had a burden for missions, like wherever. She always felt like God was going to give her a man that would have a specific, more specific call, you know, and if nothing else, I definitely had that.
Mm-hmm.
And but we weren't being released by God yet during that time, 2000 up until like 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were inner city missionaries right there and in West Kensington, North Philly. And God did amazing things there, just really, really neat stuff. But in 2009, you know, we just felt like God was starting to give us the green light to go. And we applied with Jem and, you know, raised the rest of our support. Hmm. And we had to double it to go from Philly to Paris. But and so, yes, we wound up there Christmas 2010 and started language school, did a year and a half. Was in a French church there, southeast side of Paris, as an assistant pastor for a couple of years. And then we started our own church plant called Liberté, which is freedom in French, in September 2014.
That's great.
Talk through that name. I mean, obviously we know what freedom means, but why did you land on that? And what does that mean to even a French person?
Well, it's a good question, actually, because for the French, they have three pillars or three principles on which their whole society is founded. So it's Liberté, Fraternité, and Égalité. And so it's freedom, it's brotherhood, and it's equality, or freedom, equality, and brotherhood. And so liberté, freedom, is like a huge thing in the French culture. Like, like, don't ever do anything that would block our freedom.
Mm.
That's how the French think. And so for them, religion is a huge block to freedom. And so when you say Jesus, they're thinking religion, and they're thinking block to freedom.
Huh.
And so that's another conversation, but that's a huge thing in the French mindset. So we just felt called to call our church plant that because the French resonate with liberté, that concept, and then it could be a good bridge for sharing what we mean by that. And in addition, I'm from Philly, which is the city of liberty, you know, and so we like freedom too.
Oh, well,
so.
Yeah, you're just the modern day Benjamin Franklin.
Benjamin Franklin was huge in Paris back in the day.
Exactly,
he was extremely popular.
You're right.
Yeah, he did a lot to help us win the war because without the French. We might, you know, still be speaking English. Oh, well, yeah, wait a second. We are speaking English.
Just a different accent. That's great. What, you know, I think, you know, I was thinking about you saying, you know, going to language school and learning the language and all that. Like, I think for a lot of, at least I think a lot of Americans, maybe it's just me, but like have a thing where that's like a hang up. You know, I don't think I could go do that because of the difficulty with that. I mean, we're weaker at that as Americans, I think, than other cultures. So. Mm-hmm. How was that for you? Was that a fear thing for you, or what did you think?
No, I was excited to be able to have the opportunity just to, for a year, just focus on the language. And Jem's real good with that. They say, look, let's get the language first. Let's get you to a certain level. They call it B2 that you have to get to, and then, you know, release you into ministry. So if you can get the B2, you know, in 6 months, great. Mm-hmm. Usually it takes a year.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I did a year and a half because, I was 40.
Just being thorough.
Yeah. Well, I was 40 years old when I started. Yeah. I started at zero.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I would say the first thing is you have to be called.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're called and God is leading, then you're going to be motivated.
Yep.
That said, it was probably the definitely one of the most extremely difficult things I've ever done.
Wow. Yeah.
And there's a lot of different reasons for that. Your culture shock, you're going through culture shock, and culture shock comes in waves and there's levels to it. So they talk about, because initially you're in a honeymoon phase and then that wears off after 3 months and then you hate the place. And then 6 months you hit a wall. And then they talk about the year wall and stuff like that. Okay, so there's a lot going on besides just the language.
And that's so, good stuff for people to understand. Yeah. Keep going.
But but it can be an extremely rewarding process too, because for 6 months, I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't understand what people were saying. My wife is Puerto Rican, so she has Spanish, you know, the Spanish language. So she could understand basically what people were saying, even though she couldn't respond to it, which is a huge help.
Yes.
At least you know what's going on. I didn't know anything, you know, and I was really struggling. And about 6 months in, I remember being at the supermarket and these people were walking by behind me. And I understood what they were. I could understand what they were saying. I was like, it was just like something clicked. And it's just like, wow, okay. So little by little it comes, man, because it you know, if you pour it in there, it's going to come out, you know. The problem with us Americans is that we're in such a rush,
right?
And so we want it to happen yesterday,
right,
instead of trusting the process and just walking through it and trusting God and doing our homework, and then it comes, you know, little by little. So
that's cool. Is it part of even that, whether it's 6 months or a year and a half, you're also just culturally, you know, acclimating that whole time without all this pressure to be, I got to share my faith. I got to bear fruit instantly. Right. Yeah, that kind of a thing.
Yeah. So Jim's real good with that. They want to give you that cushion because, you know, under spiritual warfare going on too with you and your family, we have a lot of stories with our kids. We got 5 kids. So our second day there, our son almost choked to death on a heart attack candy. I had to pull open the car door and give him a Heimlich just in time. And then he had his eye burned 3 months in, and the doctors thought he would never see again. His eye was almost completely burned out. And God healed him.
Whoa.
Did a miracle. So there's a lot of warfare going on. Everyone's getting sick because you're getting adjusted to the germs and the bacteria and everything, and you're trying to pass the test because you do feel that pressure, like people are paying money for me to be here, like I need to, like, not only get the language, but I need to, like, be leading, like, tons of people to the Lord, like, yesterday.
Exactly.
It's not good to think like that. You have to, like, really slow it down and give yourself time. And then you're homesick. Then the holidays come around. It's tough, man. It's tough.
And you went over 7 years without coming back at all, or just not coming back on furlough?
No, yeah. We shot back. We did 7.5 years on the field, but we shot back in for the summer of 2015.
Okay.
And got a little break, but I was running around doing stuff.
Right.
And then for about a month in summer of 2016, my brother got married.
Okay.
So we shot back for that.
It. Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Now step back for a minute. Some of our church knows about what GEM means, but will you just explain that and talk a little bit about kind of not only what they do in Paris, but worldwide?
GEM's pretty incredible, actually. Greater Europe Mission. So it's a mission for all of Greater Europe, and started in 1949 by Bob Evans, who was a military chaplain, came ashore into France during the end of World War II, and was likewise just completely wrecked by the spiritual condition of the French people, especially after the war, after World War II. And he was a peer of Billy Graham and stuff, and so he was a real apostolic type. So he started the mission, and he actually wound up starting in a town north of Paris called La Morlaix. And the idea was to train and equip Europeans to reach Europe, to disciple Europe. And so it started in France. And he was a French speaker. I think he grew up as an MK in West Africa or something like that. So he had the French language. And so it's grown a lot since then. Now we have over 300 units all over Europe. And what's great about GEM, one of the strengths is, you know, there's a lot of flexibility to do all kinds of different things. And so we have Bible colleges that were started and are still, like, staffed by GEM personnel, but you would never know it because GEM has always tried to kind of stay in the background and, you know, put the Europeans, you know, up front.
Yeah.
And so, they have evangelists and pastors and, you know, librarians and work crews and doing all kinds of stuff. Now the refugee crisis, we have a center in Lesvos, Greece, which God is using amazingly. So it's really dynamic. And now we're moving to Frankfurt, Germany. Yeah. If I'm allowed to say that. I don't know if the secret is out, but
no, you're allowed to say that for sure. I think because I've heard that a lot. Yeah,
moving meaning the headquarters.
The headquarters moving to Frankfurt, Germany, which is a huge, huge deal.
So. Yeah, talk a little bit because that means this has been a missions agency that was from America right to Europe, but is transitioning to be a European-based mission to Europe, right? Like, is that, can you maybe speak to the significance of that?
Sure. So the idea has always been, okay, America, so the arrow has always gone from America and really basically suburban America, really, to Europe. Mm-hmm. So that's the pipeline. And under our new leadership, John Burns, who's European, he's British, he kind of brought that vision saying, well, wait a second. I mean, there's other Christians in the world besides in America, obviously. What if we can leverage Europeans also to reach Europeans? What if we can partnership with the Church of the Global South, which is growing phenomenally in this in this age?
Yeah.
You know, and what if we can do other things and just kind of get out of that box of, you know, it just goes from churches in suburban America to Europe.
Right.
There's, you know, there's thousands of ways to skin a cat. And so yeah, that took on momentum. And so the idea is to be planted there and based there, still with some offices here in America.
Right.
I mean, it's not saying we want European and Global South workers instead of American workers.
Right, right.
It's just saying, yeah, American workers, absolutely. Let's bring them, as many as want to come. But there's a whole nother world out there, too, that we can leverage for the harvest that is definitely ripe in Europe.
I think that's pretty unique and interesting. And I think that's the way that, as we see just the world develop in different ways, right? That, love that. I love that. So what, you know, obviously we've talked, I've been to Lesvos and seen the work there in the refugee camps and seen some of how the work that's happening in Athens and then in other parts of Western Europe with refugees. What, you know, what's maybe been some of what Jem's role has been with refugees and maybe yours in Paris? How have you seen that, you know, affect your ministry in Paris?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Jem's doing a lot. There's been a lot of different Jem people on the ground there, on the front lines there in Greece. I haven't been able to get over there. We've been up to our eyeballs with our church plant and stuff in Paris. But they've been right there on the front lines from the beginning. Kim Garrity is a man and his wife who initially were kind of the tip of the spear for Jem over there. And then we have some other Jem families over there now that you know in the Lesvos Center. So you've been there. You might be able to speak to that more specifically. Exactly.
Well, yeah. I guess I've seen it in Lesvos and can speak to like what it's like there. And there's just, it's amazing work with this community center out right outside the refugee camp. And because the refugee camp is pretty dark place, you know, it's rough, but it is just ripe with opportunity. And so, I mean, they're baptizing people by the 40s and 50s of people, you know, and it's been incredible to see the fruit. Mm-hmm. But I also know as the flood of people has crossed Western Europe that, I mean, heard stories of even tens of thousands of people in Germany and other places coming to know the Lord and that are coming from these maybe countries that were closed even to any missionaries going into before, right?
Yeah, it's an incredible opportunity. And so God, we believe that God is actually sending, you know, these unreached people groups in these closed countries to Western Europe, to Europe and to Western Europe, so they can hear the gospel. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that ultimately is what's behind it, that God's using it. I'm not saying he's causing wars to do that, but he's using it in incredible ways. Like Germany, for example, I think they had about 1 million refugees come. Unfortunately, I think they had to send some back, but I know some Jem missionaries who've seen great fruit in Germany through outreach to the refugees. In France, they really only let in, like, I think they capped it at like 22,000.
Okay.
Which is, and they really controlled it and really made it very difficult for faith organizations to get in.
Huh.
We had a teammate, a young lady, Allison, who did an incredible job with working with some other French ministries, doing some creative stuff like, you know, art ministry and sport ministry and stuff and exercise stuff to get in there, and did some just incredible job with, you know, meeting some and befriending and doing life and relationship with some of the refugees. But So they were like Afghan refugees and Syrian refugees and a lot of West African refugees because of French and stuff. So for us, what we would see, our church plant, we have a lot of different nations represented already. Mm-hmm. And so we wouldn't get tons of refugees. We would get a little bit here and there where we'd meet some or get invited to like, hey, can you help this person or that person? We would try to do what we could. Mm-hmm. We did have Albanian folks living with us for a season, trying to help them. They were refugees.
Oh, wow. We've got a lot. We love
Albanians.
Yeah, we love Albania.
So. I do. Yeah, I do too. They're great. It's awesome. Yeah. And but in France, and I know other ministries that have done stuff, more stuff in Paris and in France, but generally what they would do is they would take them in, they would put them into different camps and stuff, and then they would eventually send them out to different places, usually like smaller villages, actually, throughout France. But overall, I think it's an incredible opportunity that God's just sending these closed countries to Western Europe where they can hear the gospel.
And Bill, you're talking about opportunity, which is a word that I think Eric and I learned from you and from others at Jim, because over here in the news, it's been called a refugee crisis. But then to flip that to say, well, granted, there is a major crisis of migration, but it's also an opportunity to love people with the love of Jesus, to show the gospel, to demonstrate it, and then to teach it, to proclaim it. Mm-hmm. What other, on that line, in France, we hear a lot of the negative headlines. We hear about terrorist attacks that are happening in marketplaces and protests. Mm-hmm. And what do you see as some of the crises that are happening overall in France right now, maybe even in Europe? And what are the opportunities that are based out of that? Just a small question for you, I know.
Yeah, that would be like a whole college semester if we could unpack that. I think at the root, the issue is nihilism and hopelessness. And what we see in Europe is on a daily basis, what we deal with, especially in France, is the fruits of nihilism, the fruits of just secular atheism, so deeply entrenched with generations of people growing up with absolutely no hope. And so that is there. And then you have refugees coming in, and some people don't want them in their country. So you're starting to see the far right rise up in Europe now, anti-refugee, anti-immigrant and stuff. And so you have this deep nihilism, this deep emptiness, you know, people trying to protect their own thing and they're trying to get life out of their you know, politics and stuff. And then you got, you know, these refugees coming in, and they already have an immigration crisis before that, before the refugees, because everyone's trying to get into Western Europe.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to get to Rome or to Paris or Berlin or Madrid.
Yeah.
Like the whole world.
Yeah.
And so we were dealing with that, like we had Albanians.
Right.
There was a flea market across street, across the boulevard from our house. And there's like, you walk through there, you'll hear like 12, 17, 22 different languages.
Wow.
You know, and rarely are they there legally. You know, so it was already that going on. And then you had, you know, all the refugees coming in. So I just think in general, it's just like, it feels like to me that living there and right in the middle of it, it feels like it's just a huge spiritual conflict. I just feel like God is moving in Europe in this day and age. And I think the enemy is trying to thwart that and confuse that. I think that's why we've seen so much unrest in like in Paris, for example, a few months ago. And it's just constant. There's just this constant turmoil. And I just feel like this might be a little pie in the sky, but I just feel like God wants to just bring a great revival like into like Europe and Western Europe in this season. And I think he wants it to touch like all nations.
Yeah.
And I just think he wants to use Europe in an incredible way in this next season, in this century. I think that Europe is the mission field of the 21st century. You know, living there, being very, I was a missions major at Bible college, so you know, I totally get it, and there's needs everywhere. Totally love missionaries to Africa and South America and Asia and stuff. But the world is flocking to Europe.
Yep.
You know, and we have a great opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, I think there's huge need. We've talked about it, whether it's not even post-Christian anymore. You say it's like pre-Christian. It's like on the cusp of being being able to see like a explosion,
breakthrough
of the gospel and the work of the Holy Spirit, and I absolutely believe that. And if the whole world, even who are in hard to reach places, go to this place that it's super easy for us, even as Americans, to get to and to go, it's like, hey, let's jump on this, right? This is the opportunity now.
Not only that, but most of the world wants to talk to Americans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, most of the world wants to interact and interface like, wow, you're from America and you're here. Why are you here?
Right.
And so we have a tremendous open door and a tremendous influence and a tremendous opportunity to share Christ with people.
Mm-hmm.
What do you typically say when someone does ask why you're here? What's your normal response?
Well, it depends usually on how bold I'm feeling that day. I tell my people to just go right to their testimony and their gospel and to the gospel. Sometimes I'm too tired and I just want to get home and rest, just to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I usually say God called me here, and I'm a Protestant pastor, and you know, we're trying to share, you know, how much Jesus loves people, and we're trying to help people have a better life. And you know, we do anti-trafficking ministry, and we do other stuff too besides just the church plant. And so I usually cite some of that and just try to help people mm-hmm. see that we're just here trying to help people.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, one last closing question. So somebody's, maybe they've been here on Sunday and they've heard more about the work in Europe, or they've been listening to this podcast and there's, you know, just a little bit of, there's a tug of some sort in their heart mm-hmm. or they're feeling something. Like what do you have to say to that person that's maybe just got the beginnings of a tug to missions, to serving in some way and maybe in Europe?
Hmm. Wow, I think the first thing is to, I think sometimes we overanalyze it, the call and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that we have to look at like what we're going to do with our life through the lens of what God's already said in his word.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was like God had already said, go and make disciples of all nations. So for me, when I was quote unquote becoming a missionary, it wasn't I try not to make it too complicated, because I felt like Jesus already, it's already God's will in a sense that,
yeah.
that we go and share the gospel with the nations. Like yeah. it's like he already said that, you know? And so I just think just to try to look at it through that lens,
mm-hmm.
like God's already saying go. And so I used to pray like, not Lord, why should I go? I would pray like, why shouldn't I go? I would look at it through the lens, like what's stopping me? And that's assuming true. The green light, assuming the go, because he already said it,
huh.
like start moving in my life in that way and inviting the Lord to stop me, to give me the red light and redirect me, because he's faithful.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we kind of are begging him to give us a sign of yes, but sometimes we can already move on his previous yes and just ask him to give us a sign for no.
Mm-hmm.
And he's faithful to do that. That's what he did for me in 1998. I was moving.
Yeah.
And he redirected me, and it was cool.
Yeah.
You know, so I would just encourage people just to kind of look at it through that lens. God's already said go. Start taking steps, you know, like, and don't be afraid.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to, like, force you to go to Africa, you know, or force you to go to the worst place in Europe. Like, oh, because you'll be miserable. And frankly, we don't want you there if you're miserable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, stay home. Like, you're just going to ruin it. You know, so he's not going to do that. He's good, you know, and he's just a good father. And I would just say, pray into it. Look at that word and say, Lord, okay, I'm going to start moving towards it. And please stop me.
Yeah.
And hold it with an open hand and just stop me or leave me or redirect me. But I'm going to start moving towards it. And, you know, I like Europe and I like Jim, and I'm going to start there.
Right.
You know what I mean? And just let God lead you.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. What do you think about that, Matty?
I love it.
Well, Matt Doan, it has been good to have you on the podcast.
Thank you.
Yes, it's been incredible.
Wonderful time with Bill.
Yeah, Bill, we really appreciate you. We are excited about what God's doing in you, in all of Greater Europe Mission in general. And so just Calvary Church is a huge fan of yours, and we're praying for you and excited for what God's doing.
We really appreciate it. God bless you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Calvary Life Podcast. See you next time.
Thanks again for joining us on the Calvary Life Podcast. If you enjoyed our show this week, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. If you want to learn more about Calvary Church or share any of your thoughts, check us out on our website at calvarylife.org or find us on one of our social media accounts. We're on Instagram at calvary_church, Facebook at Calvary Church of Santa Ana, and Twitter at Calvary Life.